Good evening. This is Life Rattle, your story show, and I'm your host, Virginia Ashbery. Tonight, Life Rattle number 1340 features three classic stories from Life Rattle writer Jill McKelvey. Jill McKelvey was born the youngest of three daughters in Winnipeg in 1952. She grew up in Winnipeg, then moved with her family to Vancouver when she was a teenager, before returning to Winnipeg to attend university. She married at 23, and 2 years later moved with her husband from Winnipeg to Mississauga, just 3 weeks after adopting their son. We heard about those events in McKelvey's stories last month. Jill McKelvey has written a whole series about her family's experience of adoption, and we're going to listen to the last three of five stories on that subject tonight. So let's listen now to Jill McKelvey on Life Rattle, and remember that some Life Rattle stories contain language and situations some listeners may find offensive, so listener discretion is always advised.
Joan by Jill McKelvey. "You look too skinny to have a three-week-old baby," Joan said. She stood in my front hall and she held a small violet in a terracotta pot. It took me 4 months to get a flat stomach after Tori was born, and I exercised every day. "Oh, and welcome to the neighborhood," Joan said. She handed me the potted plant. Joan peered through the French doors into the living room. She held onto the door frame as she slipped off her boots. Her head came inches below the top of the door. She wore tailored gray pleated pants, black shoes, and a black turtleneck. She spoke with an accent that sounded English or Australian. "Thank you, Joan," I said. I noticed my own clothes. I wore striped jean overalls and penny loafers. Pigtails sprouted above my ears and spit-up covered my left shoulder. "Would you like to come in for a cup of coffee, Joan?" I said. "Tea would be nice," Joan said. She handed me her checkered jacket and stepped over a stack of unpacked boxes that blocked the entrance to the kitchen. Her eyes lingered, squinted, widened, and roamed. I dug into a cardboard box. A box labeled pots and pans should have what I needed, and pulled out a saucepan to boil water for tea. "Is it a girl or a boy you have?" Joan asked me. "It's a boy. Timothy," I said. "When I had Tori 6 months ago, I screamed at the doctor, 'What is it? What is it?' When the doctor said, 'It's a girl,' I shouted, 'Oh, thank God! I really didn't want a boy.' I saw the moving trucks last week. You're from Winnipeg, right? This house has been on the market a long time. You probably got a good deal. Are you breastfeeding?" I saw my reflection in the sliding glass door, and I gathered the loose hairs around my face into the elastic bands above my ears. "No, I'm bottle feeding," I said. I wet a cloth and wiped at the stains on my shirt. Joan sat up straight and turned her body to face me. "You could still breastfeed, you know. It's not too late. I belong to a breastfeeding group called the Lelechi League. There's a woman who comes to meetings who didn't breastfeed right away, and she carried a bag of formula around her neck that had a tube to her breast, and when the baby sucked on the tube and the breast at the same time, it stimulated her milk. She was ecstatic. You could do that. Breast milk is better, you know. My mom didn't breastfeed me, and just look how great I turned out," I said. I smiled and gave a little laugh. Joan didn't smile. I watched the water in the saucepan and wondered if I would be able to find the tea bags. Tori is 6 months old now, and I just started her on solid food. I make my own and freeze it in ice cube trays. It's much better than Gerber or Heinz. They have too many additives and preservatives, and some companies even use MSG. My lips stretched across my teeth. I nodded. I had never heard of MSG. The water still hadn't boiled. I hunted for a lid in the cardboard box. I found one three sizes too big. It smothered the pot. I looked at Joan. Joan looked at her watch. I found three loose tea bags lying on the cupboard shelf. "Do you mind your tea in a mug?" I asked Joan. "I'm not sure where the teapot is." "It's like diapers," Joan said. "Cloth diapers are much more natural and less likely to cause a rash than Pampers. And Pampers cost the moon." "Do you use cloth?" Joan asked. I massaged the back of my neck with my fingers and heard the gurgle of bubbling water bounce and clang the metal lid against the pot. Joan moved her lips, but I couldn't make out the words. "Pardon me," I said, as I poured water from the saucepan into the mugs. "Cloth or Pampers?" Joan said. "Cloth, of course," I said. Water ran down the saucepan, splashed into the mugs, and sloshed over the side. I placed two mugs, two spoons, two tea bags, and two napkins on the kitchen table. I didn't have cream, and I couldn't find the china cream and sugar set. I plunked a quart of 2% milk down on the table beside a box of sugar cubes. Joan took her tea black. "I'm sorry I don't have any cookies to offer you," I said. "Oh, that's fine," Joan said. "I only eat arrowroot cookies, and I'm trying to quit." "Do you work?" Joan asked. "I taught music in the school system in Winnipeg," I said. "I understand that music is hereditary," Joan offered. "Maybe Timothy will be musical." "Maybe," I said. Joan sipped her tea and checked her watch. "I have to be back at 2:20, she said. "I feed Tori every 4 hours." I held the mug to my lips. Steam drifted up my nose. I added two cubes of sugar and a splash of milk. "I'm not planning to have any more children, are you?" Joan said. "Well, I hope to," I said. "Not for a few years, of course, but yes, I'd like more children." "Well, you must have had an easier labor than I had. Mine went on for nearly 24 hours. I thought I was going to die. I knew right then I wasn't going to go through that again." "So how long was your labor?" "Oh, not too long. Not nearly as long as yours," I said. I looked into my milky teacup. I looked at the kitchen clock. 2:05 p.m. I heard mewing sounds from the bedroom. "There's Timothy. Excuse me just a minute, Joan." I stood up and ran down the hall. I opened and closed Timothy's bedroom door. I leaned over Timothy's bed and rolled my eyes. "Little man," I said, "that lady scares me." I lifted Timothy out of his car bed and placed him on top of the dresser. I put one hand on Timothy's belly, and I reached into the plastic bag of Pampers with the other hand. I changed his diaper and put on a red and yellow velour romper. "You're mighty handsome," I said. I walked into the kitchen. I cradled Timothy in my left arm. "Oh, he doesn't look a bit like you," Joan said. "He must look like his father." The doorbell rang. Raisin, my Irish setter, turned circles in the front hall. I opened the door. A woman smiled at me. She held a cookie tin in her hands. Raisin stood on his hind legs and pounced his front paws on my visitor's shoulders. "Hi, I'm Donna," she said. She stared into Raisin's eyes. "I live down the street." I grabbed Raisin's collar and pulled him off my guest. Donna shifted the cookie tin under her left arm and stuck her right hand in mine. "I'm Jill," I said. "Yes, I know. I hope you like chocolate chip cookies," Donna said. She lifted the lid of the cookie tin, and the smell of chocolate and warm dough escaped. I rubbed my lips together. "My favorite," I said. Donna followed me into the kitchen. Timothy lay on his back in his playpen. "What a cutie," Donna said. "I understand you adopted him in Winnipeg." "That's right. Who told you that?" I said. "Have you met Joan Hunter?" Donna said. "She told me. She told me before you even moved in." My tongue stuck to the roof of my mouth, and I swallowed the last drops of saliva. I placed 2 cups of coffee, 2 napkins, 2 plates of cookies, a cream jug, and a sugar bowl on the table.
That was Jill McKelvey reading her story, Joan. McKelvey's next story in this series is called Elena. Let's hear that one now.
Elena by Jill McKelvey. She's single, poor, 21, 6 months pregnant with a black man's baby, and she'd like you to be the baby's mother, Lynn said to me over the phone. Lynn, our social worker, had our name on an international adoption list. We waited for a third child. I swallowed a mouthful of Tropicana orange juice and pressed my forehead against the sliding glass door. Her name is Elena, Lynn said. She came to us against her mother's wishes. But she's 21 and she can do as she pleases. We gave her 3 files to look at. She read yours, and she didn't bother with the other 2. It seems like you've got what she wants. Wow, I said. My breath fogged up the window around my face. I wrote baby in the fog with my left index finger. What made us special? I said. She wants the baby to have siblings. She wants the baby to have music. She wants the baby to have religion. But most of all, she wants the baby to fit in. In your family, this baby will grow up with other adopted children, other racially mixed children. In your family, this baby won't feel different. I lowered myself onto the edge of the kitchen table. I wiggled my toes and my knees and my thighs. I stood, I sat, I smiled. And Jill, Lynn said, she wants to meet you. I thought about Elena as I huddled with my family outside the low-rise gray brick building in Burlington. I held my 5-year-old daughter Jamie in my arms. She squeezed her legs around my waist. Peter's hands rested on Tim's shoulders. I had never met the birth mothers of either of my children. Occasionally, I thought about them. They didn't have a face, and they didn't have a name. We watched people push their bodies through the revolving door. We looked for a pregnant woman. A woman 9 months pregnant would stand out. And we wondered if she would recognize us from our file. I knew a few things about Elena. She had been adopted at birth. She had not finished high school. She had a short relationship with a married 31-year-old East Indian man. She got pregnant. He went back to India and to his wife. Elena lived with her mother. Elena and her mother were poor. Lynn appeared at the door. "Come on in," she shouted through the glass. 2 by 2, we jumped between the revolving glass doors and shuffled forward. "Elena's already in my office," Lynn said. Jamie clung around my neck. We walked down a long hall. Timothy's wet sneakers squeaked on the linoleum floor. A woman looked up from her magazine as we passed by. Our eyes met. She looked down. I glanced over my shoulder at her. She looked down again. Lynn stopped outside her office door. We all stopped and looked at each other. Our eyes jumped from face to face. Lynn went in first. She reached back and placed her hand on the sleeve of my coat. I stepped into the room. A pregnant woman filled a reclining chair. Her long auburn hair hung over her chest and rested on her bulging belly. "Hi, Elena. I'm Jill, and this is Jamie," I said. Jamie buried her face in my shoulder and tightened her grip around my neck. Peter and Tim entered the cramped room. Tim raised his hand and waved at Elena. Peter reached around him and shook Elena's hand. We sat down on gray metal folding chairs. Lynn sat at her desk. Her chair swiveled. Elena shifted her bulk in the recliner. "Elena's the lead singer in a band," Lynn said. "Well, she was until a few months ago. She's hopeful to go back to singing and back to school after the baby is born." "That's wonderful, Elena. I wish I could sing," I said. I looked at Peter. He raised one eyebrow. He reached into his coat pocket for his Nicorette gum. We both looked at Elena. Elena twisted a long strand of auburn hair around her finger. "But you teach music, right? I really want this baby to have music in his life. I've been playing and singing to him ever since I found out." I sat on the edge of the folding chair and leaned forward. I watched Elena coil and uncoil her hair. "I teach music and choir, and I belong to a musical theater group," I said. I smiled at Elena. Elena smiled back. "Let's ask your mother to join us now," Lynn said to Elena. "She didn't want to come here, you know," Elena said. "I know, but I think she'll feel better if she joins us. I'll go get her." We listened to Lynn's high-heeled shoes click, click, click down the long hallway. I stroked Jamie's hair and kissed the side of her neck. I licked my dry lips and chewed at the inside of my cheek. I looked over at Elena. "How are you feeling?" I said. "I'm okay, but I'll be glad when all this is over. My mom thinks she knows what is best for me. But it's my life, and I have to decide for myself." The door opened. Lynn entered the room. Elena's mom followed. Peter stood up, smiled, and shook hands with Margaret. Peter gave her his chair and unfolded another chair for himself. I took my arm from around Jamie and placed my hand in Margaret's. Her hand felt slippery. I couldn't tell if it was her sweat or mine. Lynn took out a package of crayons and some paper. She placed them in front of Jamie. Jamie loosened her grip around my neck. "Timothy, do you play any sports?" she asked. "I play soccer and baseball mostly," Tim said. "I play ball hockey in my driveway, but I don't play ice hockey. I ski sometimes, I take swimming lessons, and I'm working on my green badge." "You're a busy guy," Lynn said. She held up red and pink suckers. Tim thanked her and gave the pink one to his sister. "Timothy, do you have any questions about the baby? Any questions that you would like to ask Elena?" Lynn said. Tim looked at me with wide eyes. I smiled and crinkled my nose at him. He held a black crayon in the palm of his hand. He picked at the paper cover with his thumbnail. "When will you have the baby?" Tim asked. "It could be any day now," Elena said. "Can we have the baby right away?" Elena looked at Lynn, and Lynn looked at Tim. "Almost right away," Lynn said, "as soon as Elena leaves the hospital." "Will it be a boy?" Tim asked. "We already have a girl." He looked back and forth between Lynn and Elena. Elena laughed. "It'll be a surprise, I guess," she said, "but it feels like a boy." Timothy put the red sucker in his mouth and reached into his backpack for his Star Wars book. Elena, I said, are you very sure this is what you want? You might feel differently when the baby is born. No, I'm positive, she said. I want to finish high school. I want a better job. I want a better life. Elena looked over at her mother. Her mother looked down at her hands and pressed her thumbs together. My mom doesn't want me to give the baby up, but it's better for the baby, and it's better for me, and it's better for my mom. Margaret's chin rested on her chest. Her brow folded and her lips bunched. She squeezed her fingers together. Jamie's crayon rubbed against the paper. Timothy looked up from his book. Margaret, Lynn said, why don't you show Peter and Jill the pictures of your grandchildren? Margaret bent down. I watched her back rise and fall. She unzipped her large black shoulder bag, reached in, and pulled out a plastic folder. She lifted her head up, straightened her back, and said, this is Nicole, this is Frank, and this is little Tristan. They're beautiful, Peter told her. I smiled and nodded. I don't get to see them very often, Margaret said. They don't live nearby. But you do get to see them, Elena said. Margaret looked at Elena and sighed. She looked over at me. You have lovely children, she said. Thank you, Margaret. Lynn stood up and leaned on her desk. She looked around the room. Elena arched forward and placed her hand on the small of her back. I've got to stand up, she said. Margaret jumped from her chair and pulled Elena from the recliner. Peter moved his chair out of the way. He lifted Jamie from my lap. Elena walked over to me. Our eyes met and held for a moment. She gripped my hand. Elena shook Peter's hand and smiled at the kids. She turned away, picked up her coat, and walked out the door. Margaret followed.
That was Elena, written and read by Jill McKelvey. Let's hear McKelvey's last story now.
Elsie, by Jill McKelvey. An orange fell through the hole in my plastic Dominion bag and rolled the length of the kitchen floor. Elsie, my children's babysitter, stopped it with the side of her tattered brown moccasin. I dropped 3 bags of groceries down beside the sink. I looked at Elsie, her gray bun tilted left and her puffy pink cheeks supported tortoiseshell glasses. You'll need to talk to Timothy, Elsie said. She lowered her round body into the wicker kitchen chair. She grunted as she reached down and picked up the grapefruit-sized orange. He and I have had a good chat, but he needs to talk to you. I've hugged him and held him, but he needs to hug you. Elsie, what's happened? I asked. I grabbed a wicker chair and pulled it up close to her. He's been in a fight. A fight? I said. It's all right. He's okay. But the other guy was much bigger. I think Timothy got a piece of him. You should be proud. Proud? He's only 12. He's never been in a fight, I whispered. It happened at school after the bell rang. Some guy named Ryan McGuire. Ryan McGuire? I said. He's huge. I had taught Ryan in junior choir at church. He played the fox in our spring musical, Making Friends. At about 5 feet 10 inches and 180 pounds, he towered over and outweighed all of the other grade 7 boys. They put him on the school football team. He couldn't run. He didn't have to. I heard that Ryan and some of his buddies tried to set fire to the playground equipment at White Oak School. He taunted Timothy about being adopted, Elsie continued. Timothy hit him because he said something nasty about his sister Maggie. I unbuttoned my coat and wiped the warm sweat from my forehead. Why? I muttered to myself. Why are kids so mean? I stood up and walked over to the groceries. I stared into one of the bags. I stared into another bag. I stared at the tin of chicken noodle soup. I reached into the bag and took out the tin. I walked back to the chair and sat down in front of Elsie. You go and talk to him, Elsie said. She reached over and took the soup tin from my hands. She rested her plump, freckled arm across my shoulder. Let him tell you the whole story. I'll put the groceries away, and then I'll be off. Go on now. You'll be fine. Oh, Elsie, I don't know if I'll be fine. I watched as Elsie gripped the sides of the chair. She pushed herself up and grabbed onto the windowsill. She winked at me. I took a breath, relaxed my shoulders, turned away, and walked down the hall. I stopped outside Timothy's bedroom door. I glanced back at the kitchen. Elsie peered into the fridge. She squeezed the orange in her fingers. I stood in the dark hallway. I stared at Timothy's door. A picture of Hulk Hogan glared at me. I tapped the first few beats of Jingle Bells on Hulk Hogan's face. I opened the door a crack. I opened the door wider. Hey, Tim, I said. I hear you've had kind of a rough afternoon. My eyes sailed around the room. A puddle of vanilla ice cream floated in a yellow bowl beside Timothy's bed. Two chocolate cookies rested side by side on a piece of paper towel. His Mr. T backpack hung on his closet door. Mud clung to the side of his pack and dried bits gathered on the floor. Timothy sat on his bed. He leaned against the headboard and hugged his knees to his chest. Slivers of red skin streaked across his chin. He licked a patch of dried blood in the corner of his mouth. Timothy crumpled a piece of paper. He arched it across the room at his miniature basketball net. The paper hit the wall. It landed on the thick blue carpet. I held the door handle. I listened to his breathing. He glanced at me and crumpled another paper. He looked at the net. He lifted. He tossed. He missed. I let go of the door handle. I walked over to his beanbag chair. I sank down into the beans. I folded my legs into the black vinyl. He said you weren't my real mom, and I wasn't your real son, and he said it over and over and over in this high voice, and I said, she's just as real as your mom, probably more real. And he said, my mom wouldn't have a stupid black nigger baby like your sister. And I swung at his face as hard as I could, and he lost his balance, and he grabbed my shirt on his way down and pushed my face into the dirt. And a teacher ran out and flapped her arms, and she said she would be phoning our parents. And I hate him, I hate him, I hate him. I hate his guts. Me too, I said. I sucked in my lips. Timothy squeezed a crumpled sheet of paper. She's not a nigger anyway. He's the stupid one. I untangled my legs and climbed up onto the end of Timothy's bed. I rested my feet on top of his feet and rubbed my big toes across his grass-stained socks. No, Tim, she's not a nigger, and she's not stupid, I said. She is brown, and she is a baby, and she is beautiful, and she is your sister. Elsie said fighting is dumb and stupid name-calling is even dumber. But standing up for your sister is darn fine. Darn fine, I said. I pressed my toes hard into his feet. Do I ever have to talk to Ryan again? Not if you don't want to. Good, Timothy said. I tore a page of lined paper from Timothy's notebook. I scrunched it into a ball and rolled it between my palms. I climbed off the bed and walked across the room. I opened the bedroom door and tossed the ball high over my head.
That was Elsie, written and read by Joe McKelvey. And that concludes Life Rattle number 1340. Arnie Ackman recorded Joe McKelvey reading her stories. My name is Virginia Ashbery. And Life Rattle is produced from Toronto and was created by Guy Allen and Arnie Ackman.